This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The South Carolina Supreme Court didn't just overturn Alec Murdaugh's conviction. They told prosecutors the first trial went too far on financial crimes and not far enough on the actual evidence of murder. 12 and a half hours of testimony about stolen money. Meanwhile, the woman who was inside that house every day, who knew which shirt Alec wore, how Maggie folded her pajamas, and where the towels belonged, and what was moved, missing, or wrong the morning after, testified for 3 hours. If round two is coming, the question isn't just what the prosecution will do differently. It's what Blanca Simpson knows that nobody thought to ask in the first trial of Alec Murdaugh. You spent 3 hours testifying during the first trial, talking about all different elements of that life, how Maggie folded her pajamas, if she folded her pajamas, where the towels belonged, what was moved, missing, or wrong the morning after. We can go into some of that again in a little bit. When you and in no way would I think you'd change your story or anything like that, but if you're to look at this beyond just your own experiences, in round two, when the prosecution will be asking questions of yourself and others, are there any questions that you look at now and go, I wish they would have asked that the first time, either so you could clarify something or share something that maybe you didn't share, or that others that have information that would have been helpful for a jury to consider, or for people to understand the dynamics of everything that was going on here, the way you see it?
The first thing was to explain the fact that the first time that I heard the kennel video, it was on a laptop, and the speaker system was not that great. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people were saying that I kind of contradicted myself. It was not a contradiction. Actually, the way that it was echoing when I was listening to it, it was not that the sound system was horrible on it.
Sure.
So that's one of the reasons, you know, that once I heard it and I saw, you know, the image, I told them right away who it was, Maggie, Paul, and Alex. Mm-hmm. But the original time, the first time that I heard it, it was on I don't know if it had been dropped too many times or what, but that laptop had a really bad sound system, audio. I couldn't hear it that well. I actually recorded something on my laptop the other day to try to get some information out. And it was the worst recording I have ever. It reminded me of that recording because It was like I could not get the sound to, and I was speaking into it. Yeah. And it was just horrible. And it took me back to that day when I heard it. And I was like, I can't, it's almost like you blame yourself. It's like, why couldn't I describe it? Why couldn't I say that?
But walk me back. Cause I don't think I know. When was the first time you saw the video on the bad speaker laptop? Was that in court, or where was the first time you had that experience?
I heard the audio. They never showed me a video.
Okay, so you heard the audio. Was that during the trial itself?
No, I heard it. They brought it here prior to the trial.
Okay.
They came to my house and they wanted me to hear the audio, but the audio was horrible on that laptop.
Yeah.
And
so you
didn't
want to,
even though people said I contradicted.
So you heard it at home. When you did have the realization and you had clear audio to make an accurate judgment call on what you were taking in, and you realized it was Alec right there on that tape, and the timing from what we understand, if the prosecution is correct, puts him right there. It, more than anything else, totally contradicts his original story. And this was obviously before Alec went on the stand and said, I was lying about my story. When you first had that realization, number one, did you think he had done it at that time, or did that seal the deal for you in your mind that this man, either he did it or he had something seriously to do with it because that put him there and that was not what he was saying? What was going through your mind when you could confirm to yourself, Alec's story is not adding up?
When I saw the towel, that glimpse of the towel in his Suburban.
What was the towel in the Suburban for you?
When they released that video, that body cam video. But prior to that, I was still kind of like on the fence, hoping and, you know, praying that it, you know, that it wasn't him, you know. And when they released the body cam video that Officer Green that night was wearing, the first officer that responded to the call, mm-hmm. when I saw the towel, because of the fact that the pajamas were laid out in the middle of the doorway, mm-hmm. and I told him at that point I knew that it was just something about the towel that was taken off of the top of the shelf in the laundry room, and then somebody laying out her, you know, the pajamas, you know, laying flat in the middle of the doorway with a clean pair of underwear, knowing that, you know, trying to throw, I guess to me, that was like trying to throw somebody off. Like she changed in a hurry to go check on Paul or something, you know, or she must've heard something. Cause they did ask me about, can you hear, noises from the kennel inside the house. They did ask me that question several times when they talked to me, you mm-hmm. know, here and there. But you really couldn't hear anything. That house was solid.
Yeah.
If you were on the inside, unless the gunshots came right there, mm-hmm. you could not hear it in the house.
Sure.
I just could not believe that story, you know, that he was the first story that he was telling just did not make sense to me, that he laid down and he didn't hear and then from the shock, I think it angered me more when I found out about him leaving them out there after they were killed. You know, he left them almost an hour before called.
And then it makes you wonder, okay, so if he did this and he killed them and he went back to the house, he would have had to have the mindset to, if he's the one who did lay the stuff out, the pajamas, the underwear, I mean, stuff that Maggie wouldn't do, but Alec or whoever laid it out somehow thought, oh, this will throw people off. This will show that she was here and she was getting ready for bed, even though it's things she doesn't do. That's an interesting one in itself, too. But, the way we've seen Alec compartmentalize things, it's not a bridge too far to go down. Do you think Alec is the one who did those steps of laying that stuff out? The things that were, you know, the towel that was very much a tell to you of what was going on. I know you had mentioned last time we had talked that maybe there was some fixers or people of that nature here. Where's your mind on that today, now that you've had more time to kind of to simmer with this?
You know, I have a problem with the fact that people are still questioning when he left the house that he was speeding or whatever. That's nothing. There is nothing unusual about that. That sure. man would floor it. It didn't sure. matter. It was morning, noon, night. Mm-hmm. But you're going to slow down where they found her phone. Explain that to me, because that just tells me guilty all the way. You slow down where mm-hmm. your wife's phone was found, according to the data. The other thing was, you have the water hose running. What for? What was the purpose of it? You know, you could hear it in the kennel video and all that. Those are questions that I have. Another thing is the 400, 500 steps that he took, all of a sudden, you know, he had this spur of energy that they even said that during the trial. You know, did you all of a sudden have this spur of energy to do jumping jacks or whatever? You know, that's where I'm talking about. He must have been running back and forth like a crazy person in the house. As far as the cleaners, I believe after, I believe that they came in after. I do not believe that he had help with the actual murders.
No,
I do not.
you were called in, you know, the next day as the investigation is going on. Alec says, you know, I want you to clean the way Maggie cleaned the house. You know, we got company, we got guests and such coming in. I know I'm paraphrasing. Obviously, this was just a scene of a murder. Is there, I mean, there's so much to process at that moment in time, and I'm sure your mind is, you know, you're wanting to be there for the people you care about. You've been in that moment, you've got to be thinking, you know, my God, everybody's mourning. How can I help? What can I do? But you're, when you had to clean the house or clean the way Maggie did, are you in any way, shape, or form thinking, am I cleaning up a crime scene or things that maybe Alec did that would point in a certain way or direction, or retrospectively looking at it? Do you think that you ended up cleaning any of Alec's mess in that house? And obviously nothing that would be obvious like blood, but just, you know, his prints on things, the thing, whatever he did in that house in between, were you inadvertently, you know, doing some of his dirty work for him when you thought you were just trying to help the family out at those moments?
To tell you the truth, I was more concerned that her mother was coming, and her mother had to have surgery. And I wanted to make things as comfortable for her family as I possibly could. And I didn't want them to see Maggie's clothes, you know, in disarray. And I didn't want people to talk about, you know, she left a little pile of clothes or whatever, saying anything bad about her at all or Paul. And so, you know, in the back of my mind, when I pulled up, you know, when I first pulled up that morning to the house, you know, I looked around and, like I said, there was you could see tire tracks, but you could tell they were old. They were not fresh. I had a habit of doing that because I knew who was there and who had left, you know, based on where they parked in the mornings when I used to pull up. But there was a deputy car out there and nobody stopped me. Nobody said, no, you can't go in there. Nobody said, this is a crime scene. Nobody told me anything when I first got there. Nobody said anything to me.
When you look back on that, are you surprised they didn't have that whole thing locked down as a crime scene? I mean, theoretically, looking back, the whole damn thing should have been locked down and nobody should have been coming and going. It shouldn't have been a staging error. It should have been investigators, period, at that moment. But meanwhile, you know, it's almost like, you know, getting ready for a family get together. You know, it's kind of shocking just how fast all of that was moving. If you're Alec Murdaugh and you're trying to cover up for a murder, you're going to want as many people in there contaminating that scene as quickly as you can. If you're an investigator, you don't want it. But it seems no investigator had the forethought to say, no more people. We're not cleaning anything up here. How do you process that when you look back on how poorly of an investigation it was in the moments leading after the actual murders?
The way I see it, that was my first lesson in Power Privilege 101.
Yeah.
If you would have been standing there, you would have probably been saying, well, wait a minute, you know, why not the house? And, you know, why the kennels? And I think there was so many people trying to solve it within the first 24, 48 hours that you know, they were the adrenaline. They had all that adrenaline going because of who he was, you know, who his family is. And the two people that were murdered, of course, you know, being Murdaughs themselves. And I think everybody had a habit of catering to them, you know, and wanted to make it as easy going, as easy process. Which, you know, makes sense
That does and it doesn't to me. Because when you look at it and you go, okay, if we're going into this and we're assuming it's not Alec Murdaugh and somebody else did this, and you're wanting to solve the crime for this prominent family that has all this power, I would think you'd be taking such care with that crime scene to make sure nothing is contaminated. It only makes more sense that you'd be contaminating the scene if you're trying to cover up for whoever did it or introduce contaminants that are going to make it impossible to figure out who did it. If you still don't know who it is, I don't know why there's this level of carelessness to this crime scene. That's what doesn't add up to me in terms of the investigation and the officers there and the SLED officers that had been there. Is okay, if you're doing the power and the privilege of this family and you're exercising that power and privilege and we're really going to get who got this caught, why such a sloppy investigation?
I don't think they believed it was him at first.
No, I don't think so either. That argues my point, though, even further.
And I think, you know, they were just being very polite or very, I'm trying to find the word that I think.
Sure. I get what you're saying. It's almost like it was
for some
not
reason,
intentional.
They were trying to give him more.
Yeah. They're
no,
trying to give more, but
they knew the family. They knew the power. Yeah.
Not they were trying to not inconvenience them. Yeah, they didn't want to but it's
yes.
Like at that moment in time, it's not about inconveniencing. It's about solving. And it seems like that might have been a gray line. And maybe there's, you know, inexperience that then comes along with that with certain officers, a lot of people there. You see that in cases all the time where it's people may have the right intent. And I'm not saying that SLED had ill intent. I'm just shocked by some of those steps that were taken or not taken. Cause it just so, and that's going to be an interesting thing that Murdaugh certainly leans on, coming up here in the next trial.
And you know, I hate to see the fact that, I think it was, you know, there was still some kind of like intimidation going on, you know, because of all the colleagues and stuff that were their friends of the family and all that that had gathered at the home. But I also believe that he was given courtesies that none of us regular people would be given if, in fact, that would have been on our property. We would have told to leave and you can't come back until we tell you to come back.
Yeah.
And those are things that law enforcement has to work on. But another aspect of it is the fact that what the disrespectful way in which they talk to law enforcement, you know, the attorneys will talk to law enforcement to try to make them look like they don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because they'll come and you know, to gather information to make their cases. And then you turn around and you disparage them on the stage and make them look like they're, you know, that they don't know how to do their job. When in reality, look at how many people were there of power. A lot.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people out there of power. And so how can you tell somebody that's at the bottom of the, you know, totem pole, you're in charge and you're in charge, but yet you have other higher status, you know, people there, it's almost like you're trying, you know, it's intimidation to some extent.
Yeah.
But what I don't agree with is these guys go out of their way to help them, you know, as the attorneys to make their cases. And then you turn around and get them on the stand and you make them feel like they're idiots and they're not.
Yeah.
They're professional people doing a job, but, you know.
Sure. I mean,
it
seems
hard
like
to watch.
It seems like there was a lot of people in this case that people didn't want to step on the wrong toes. And there's a level to this, just like Becky Hill, where there's a certain agenda each and every person has with it. And some is good and, you know, pure, if you will, trying to get to the bottom of this, trying to get to the truth. And some have more self-serving motives to them. And it's kind of a cornucopia and a mix of everybody. And that's where you get this dynamic that we've learned about now in the last many years. The kennels themselves, the property, the kennels are now gone. Moselle, the house itself, it's been renovated. It's been sold. During the first trial, the jury did get a chance to go out there to the kennels and see the physical crime scene. Obviously, this round, they're not going to get to do that. Maybe there'll be video. Maybe there'll be something virtual. I don't know. How much do you think that weighed on the jury in round one in terms of their guilty verdict of Alec Murdaugh, seeing the crime scene itself? And how do you think this could impact the second trial where that visit's physically impossible to make?
You know, I was kind of shocked that they went out to the property to begin with because it had already been abandoned for quite some time. Mm-hmm. This second time, you know, I think the jurors are going to pay more attention to what the attorneys are saying, you know, how they put out the scenario. Mm-hmm. Because there's nothing there anymore, only pictures. And I, you know, God only knows how it's going to turn out because we really don't know. We know what he wants, you know, to be found not guilty, but I don't see why the reason his appeal was, his case was overturned was because of Becky Hill and, mm-hmm. you know, the juror incident. So yeah. It wasn't that the evidence convicted him. So
yeah,
regardless of what people are saying, you know, the evidence was very strong against him. And like I said, these are things you have to explain, you know, that I don't think they explained it enough in any of the videos or any of the shows that they've done. They have never explained, or if you want to be found not guilty, explain to me why you slowed down where your wife's phone was found. Explain to me why you ran around 500 steps. You know, automatically you got a burst of energy in the house. You know, explain to me why you had all of them people come in your house knowing that it was part of a crime. He knew what he was doing, you know, and was it convenient for him? And then you tried. And then I felt like I was used, you know, to some extent where everything was going to be deflected on me saying, well, she cleaned up the evidence. You know, no, don't bring that on me. I did my job. I was, I did my job, but I was not responsible for anybody. I was not in a law enforcement capacity, regardless. I'm not stupid, but I was not in a law enforcement capacity. That was not my job, and it was their job. So don't deflect it on me and make it look like I cleaned up or I did this or I did that. No, law enforcement was there. They should have done what they needed to do. I did my job the way I was told to do it. So, and these are the things, like I said, that you know, there's just so many questions, you know, the white pickup truck that was out there that I told them about before I left, nobody seemed mm-hmm. to make any kind of, you know, nobody seemed to say anything about it. It wasn't pertinent, I guess, but I believe it was the tractor. Somebody was on that tractor before I left.
There's a lot of questions.
I mean, I'm very passionate. You know, I want a fair trial. I do. Everybody deserves that. And I respect the court's decision. But I also want, you know, if you're going to have a fair trial, you have to ask the tough questions about, you know, those certain things, you know, gather more information, you know, as far as who was out there then. If it wasn't Paul, like I thought it was, you know, then who was out there? Who was driving that tractor before I left?
And if it's nothing of any, you know, weight, then there's nothing of any weight to it. But just mm-hmm. getting the question answered is what mm-hmm. needs to be done for it to be dismissed as nothing. There's more to come with Blanca Simpson as we continue our conversation about the trial of Alec Murdaugh, round two, and what it means for herself and everyone going forward. We'll ask the question, did Alec act alone? And get her exclusive one-of-a-kind insight like only she could give. That's coming up. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss it, and give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something, but I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Despiértate, que el $4 breakfast meal deal ha llegado a McDonald's. Incluye un sausage McMuffin o sausage biscuit, hash brown y un café caliente. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu meal deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.